Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. Coming up later, we will have the latest on the allegations against Senator Al Franken. We'll have that coming up halfway through the show or so. But first, I am joined by the head of one of the largest utilities in the nation and the largest here in Minnesota. XL Energy serves electric and natural gas customers in 8 states based in Minneapolis. And as you listen and have listened this year to comments from the president about, for example, bringing back coal jobs, it's important, I think, to ask and find out what the energy companies themselves that would use the coal are doing or interested in doing. And to that end, XL has been talking a lot about its path forward, and clean energy has a big role. Ben Folk has been CEO of XL Energy since 2011. So glad to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me here.
I really appreciate it. If you have a question here for Ben Folk of XL Energy, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you're driving. I'm actually going to start with a little piece of audio from the president back in March when he was signing an executive order that he said would bring back coal. Let's just listen to that for a second.
We've already eliminated a devastating anti-coal regulation, but that was just the beginning. Today, I'm taking bold action to follow through on that promise. My administration is putting an end to the war on coal. Going to have clean coal, really clean coal.
From your perspective, can you put the president's desires and comments into context with what is actually happening on the ground and at XL?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're seeing across the nation and certainly at XL Energy is the retirement of coal plants. And if you look at it, Tom, it's primarily being driven by changing economics. Natural gas is a game changer. And, of course, the pace of cost reductions we're seeing in renewables is also a game changer. You put those two things together, and I've said before, it's not really a matter of if coal plants are going to retire. It's just a matter of when.
You know, most of the coal, as I understand, that is actually burned here in Minnesota comes from Wyoming and Montana, I believe. I'm thinking of the coal miner or the former coal miner in Wyoming, maybe voted for Trump thinking, hey, he says my coal job is going to come back. But then I see companies like you. I've seen examples of utilities across the country that are making the same decision you are, like with what you're doing by retiring 2 coal-fired plants in Becker, Minnesota. And I think back to that coal miner or former coal miner and wonder if that's really going to happen for him or her.
Well, listen, these are tough decisions. And I feel for the coal miners. I feel for people that work at our plants when we've moved forward from coal and retire those plants. It has a deep personal impact on not only our employees, but the communities that we serve. And so one of the things we work very hard at, Tom, is making that transition as easy as possible. It's never perfect, but to try to make it as easy as possible for not only our employees, but the communities that we serve. And I think we have a great track record of doing that. But the bottom line is economics are driving this transition.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. And it's you're making the business decision, for example, to invest more in wind turbines. And you told the Public Utilities Commission here in Minnesota last month, something to the effect of it is cheaper to build a new wind turbine than to simply operate even the lowest cost of XL's existing coal power plants. Do I have that correct? Is that correct?
Yeah, we kind of call it our Steel for Fuel program, and it's exactly what it means. We look at what it costs to build a wind farm, and we are taking advantage of the federal tax credits that are available. But we look at that over a 20-year period and our return on capital of that. Then we compare that, Tom, to how much it would cost to buy natural gas during that 20-year time frame. So we're not necessarily retiring the plant, but we're not using fossil fuels as much. We're backing off of the use of the fossil fuels and letting wind displace that typically natural gas, but it can be coal as well. And then it's just an economic decision. I can run those numbers. And what we're finding is wind is a deeply in the money hedge, if you will, for our customers. So customers actually will see their bills go down as a result of our programs.
What? Why? Why is that happening, and why is natural? Just explain why suddenly natural gas is this game changer, as you said, and why things like wind have taken off so much in the last few years.
Well, I'll explain both of that. But the amazing thing is that even with low natural gas prices today, wind is still competing against that. But to answer the first part of your question, it's really hydraulic fracking. And, you know, that's, you know, it has not without some controversy, but it truly has been a game changer in America. And, you know, 8 years ago, I would have been talking to you about natural gas at the $8 to $10 unit level. Today, it's two or three. And that's a big difference. And so when you look at what it costs to run a plant on coal and what it costs to run a plant on natural gas, the energy portion of that is roughly the same, but the capital cost, it costs a lot more to build a coal plant than it does a natural gas plant. So it's this is the reason why economics are moving this transition.
What do you, and then of course, obviously worries about climate change, and you have people who would call themselves environmentalists wanting to be a part of this conversation. They'll look and see that Xcel is the number one wind producer in the country of all the utilities in the country and say, yes. But then they hear what you just said and said, oh man, natural gas, it's low because of fracking, which is not, as you noted, without its controversy. So how should we read that when you go forward to say, this is what we're doing and we are or are not being friendly to the environment in doing so?
Well, it's important to know that natural gas, while it's a fossil fuel, has half the carbon content that coal does. So we want to have as much renewables as we can on the system. You do need to make sure you have a reliable system, too. So we put all of that together, Tom, and I think we've got great plans to do even more in the future. But just to put it in perspective for you, we like to use 2005 as our base year. Back then, we had up here in the upper Midwest more than half of our energy coming from coal. And that same year, 3% came from renewables, which, by the way, made us the number one wind provider in the country.
At 3%.
At 3%.
Wow.
So today, we've already reduced carbon emissions by about 30%. But what we have concrete plans that have been approved by 2022, we'll have reduced carbon by 45%. And renewables will be at 35% of our energy mix, and coal will be less than a quarter. And we're not stopping there. And that's the kind of dialogue I want to continue to have, because I think we can do remarkable things going forward.
And that's what you told the regulators last month as well. My understanding is that where you foresee it going is that you actually will beat and keep going beyond what are already state-set goals. The state says we need all electric providers to get, what is it, 31% of electricity sales from renewable resources, at least 1.5% from solar. And my understanding is you're saying we got it and we're going to keep going past that.
Yeah,
that
we're going to go right past that. And in fact, that conversation that you're talking about, I was proud to tell the commission that the goals we set just a few years ago for 2030, we're going to meet by 2022. So 8 years early. And importantly, in the last 4 years, the average residential bill has actually gone down because fuel costs are less, our own efficiency programs and consumer efficiency programs. And so when I look forward to 2030, and that we have a lot of work to do, it's a lot of, you know, we're really on the cutting edge here. We obviously need regulatory support and approval. But I think we can be 85% carbon free by 2030. I think we could have renewables at 60% of our energy mix. And I think we can do that at a price that is at or below inflationary factors.
Ben Folk is with me, the CEO of Xcel Energy. We're taking your questions as well. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Is there anything to what you just said that could happen, say, for example, a decision by the Trump administration that could thwart everything you just said, that stops it? Or is this train, has this train left the station, and no matter what happens on the regulatory side, you're going to get there?
There's the general direction, I think, is set. You always have to be sensitive to changing economics. This is an economically driven plan. That's what's so important. You know, I like to say that most of our customers want a cleaner energy product. I know they all want an affordable, reliable product. So we have to make sure we never compromise those things. So it's not so much things that might come at the federal level. It'd be more macro trends and movement in technology. But Tom, when I talk about these kinds of goals, we don't have pie-in-the-sky assumptions on where the cost of renewables are going to be or other factors. We're very realistic about it. We do have work on a system planning basis. You know, there wasn't too many years ago we were worried about 10% renewables, much less 60% renewables on our system from a reliability standpoint. So lots of work to do there. But I'm pretty impressed with how we've been able to manage this transition so
far. And what you're talking about there is the ability to actually get the power generated at the renewable source onto the grid, which is what we hear about, right? I mean, that's been an issue. The grid itself is an issue, which we could spend a whole hour on. But you're saying that that's not a problem anymore?
Well, we have to at 80% carbon reduction and 60% renewables, we have to make sure we're not compromising reliability. I think we can get there, but we have work to do. You mentioned the grid, and we won't won't spend the hour
it's
on it.
It's a whole conversation.
But, you know, we started back in 2004 thinking about the future. And we had a program. We're engineers, so we called it CapEx 2020, where we needed to be by 2020. And we just now are completing those transmission programs. And that is setting us up for these kinds of dialogues that we're having.
And that's including the building of transmission lines, which, as you know, was not without its issues here and there because you have landowners involved in that process. It takes a long time, and there have been some disputes there for sure as well. Still, as we speak here, you noted that of Xcel's current portfolio, and is that just in Minnesota or is that all of Xcel where you're below 25% from coal right now?
That's where we're heading.
That's where you're heading.
Yeah.
Because the reason I bring that up is because, as I understand it, still most of the electricity we as Minnesotans get across all utilities, if you add up Xcel and all the other utilities that here are in Minnesota, it's still the most from coal. Significantly, it dropped below 50% a few years ago, and it has been falling. But as I understand, it's still the biggest piece on the pie.
Yeah.
How much longer is it going to be? It seems like it still is dropping.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I mentioned, it's probably about 25% for us today. It's going to be higher to this at a state level by 22. That is roughly around the same place by 2030. Tom, I think we'll have maybe 10 to 15% of our energy mix still coming from coal. Mm-hmm.
Now that's just Xcel, right? I mean,
that's
not the whole state.
That's not the whole state.
I'm just wondering if there's a day when Minnesota, across all utilities. And what's your hunch from talking to other utility leaders where Minnesota will be 0% coal?
Well, some of it will depend upon those macro, you know, economic trends that I talked about. But I am quite convinced the technology for renewables and the technology related to natural gas that we talked about will continue to improve. And if that's the case, it's just a matter of when. Nobody's going to build a new coal plant with today's economics in mind.
Ben Folk with me, the CEO of Xcel. Let's take some calls as well. Questions from you. Dean is on the phone here in Fargo. Hi, Dean. What would you like to know here today?
I would like to know about the Renewable Connect program. I know it's available in Minnesota, but it's not available in North Dakota. And Fargo right now, I know because I've spoken with the city administrator, is in negotiations for a document called a Memorandum of Understanding with Xcel. And I'm wondering if the CEO would be willing to bring the Renewable Connect program into Fargo through that memorandum.
Dean, thanks for that question. Absolutely. Love to do it. Of course, that requires regulatory approval.
In North Dakota.
In North Dakota. And I think what you're talking about is some of the policy differences between North Dakota and Minnesota that we're trying to work through because I think together our integrated system, which serves North Dakota, South Dakota, obviously Minnesota, and parts of Wisconsin, we're better together than if we can't bridge those differences and decide to split the systems. That'll be more expensive for everyone, by the way, Dean. But thanks for your interest in Renewable Connect. I hope we can deliver that product to Fargo real soon.
But you have put in the proposal, I believe, to split it up so that the North Dakota Xcel would technically be a different subsidiary than the Minnesota. Do I have that right?
We have that as an option.
You have that
It's not the preferred option. I think that'd be a painful divorce. And I honestly think, Tom, when you look at some of the things we're doing, you might be aware of the fact that we are proposing a buyout of very expensive biomass contracts. And those sorts of contracts did not sit well with the regulators in North Dakota. If we get rid of them, everybody gets a 3% reduction in their bill. And I think that goes a long way to saying, look, we can manage the environmental interest here, and if I can save you money in North Dakota, I think we can bridge all of those gaps. But these are dialogues that we're having right now.
But does that mean that, you know, all the talk you've said and given and mentioned about how economically it makes so much sense to retire coal here in Minnesota, why wouldn't those economics be exactly the same in North Dakota or any other state? Why isn't it? Or is it?
That's a very good question. And I will tell you that the wind and these sorts of things that we're doing today, I don't think they have the controversy because they are economic. But we have made decisions in Minnesota where we did not choose the most classically low-cost technology. And that's why one of the dialogues I do have with our commission and environmentalists, et cetera, within the state is we have to make sure that we focus on the goal. The goal is reducing carbon in the most efficient way possible. And if we start to deviate and do things that are expensive, we're going to raise bills, and that's going to alienate some of our key constituencies. And so if we can do a policy that focuses on economics while achieving the kind of carbon reduction goals that I mentioned, I think we all win from that.
So you work you serve customers in eight states.
Eight states.
And you've made the decision that you're retiring your only coal-fired plants here in Becker, Minnesota, in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Are you keeping coal plants online in other states because in those states it is economically feasible?
Well, it depends on the state. You might be aware of what we're doing in Colorado, where we have almost unanimous approval to start to retire our Comanche 1 and 2 plants. And by 2026, we'll have 55% of our energy coming from renewables. We'll have reduced carbon by 60%. And again, it won't cost anymore. So that's a program Coloradans are behind. Now, when we go down to Texas and New Mexico, we're also proposing adding a significant amount of wind. And while some of the stakeholders there are interested in the environmental benefits, everybody's interested in the economic benefits. Mm-hmm. So it does depend on, you know, the lay of the land. Mm-hmm.
Do you think XL one day will be at 0% coal?
Yes. Yeah, I absolutely do. We'd have to see an incredible change in the carbon capture technologies to see coal around.
Let's take one last call here from Mike in Edina. Hi, Mike. What's your question for Ben Folk here?
Hi, Mr. Polk. I want to thank you, first of all, for making Minnesota a leading state in decarbonizing our energy supply. And you deserve so much credit for that. My question is with regard, it's actually two-pronged. The Sherco plants in Becker, Minnesota is the largest CO2 polluter in Minnesota. And two of the units will be closing down, I think it's 2023 and 2025. I understand that Xcel worked with the legislators to convert that to natural gas. And being that that is many years out and the technology at that time is going to be infinitely greater than it is now in terms of storage and efficiency, mm-hmm. why would we want to guarantee through the legislature, which was passed, almost $1 billion to convert that to natural gas rather than renewables?
Thanks so much for the call there, Mike. And just to reiterate, it's going to go from coal. The plant still exists, and as you noted, that plant could still be run by natural gas. That, as I understand, is your plan right now. But why do that? Why not go more renewables? Which I believe the Public Utilities Commission asked you to do.
So it's a great question, and thanks, Mike. It's a complicated question. The first thing is we do need backup capacity on our system as we go forward to with more and more renewables, and we know the reasons for that. And storage is an answer. That technology, I think, will continue to improve, to your point. But you're still going to need, there are still grid qualities related to what a combined cycle natural gas can bring to the table. And I'll go back to what I talked about before. The community of Becker certainly takes an economic hit when these coal plants go away, putting replacement generation, which we're going to need as we look to retire other coal plants, gives them the tax base and helps support the community, creates some jobs. We also agreed to work with them with economic development. So I think you've got to look at the entire package. And that's certainly what we're doing.
So in addition to just the environmental questions that he was asking, why not wait to see what might be better in 2023? You're saying, well, hey, but you also have to think about all those workers in Becker who might lose their jobs.
Yeah, and it's even with the incredible advances in technology, I can't see where we don't need some of the grid qualities that a combined cycle plant will bring, particularly as we look to shut down other coal units. We haven't talked about our nuclear fleet. We believe it's important that we keep those plants at least till their end of their license life. And to your point, Mike, we'll be looking at technology along the way to see what makes sense, in the 2030 to 2034 timeframe when those licenses expire.
Ben Volk, CEO of XL Energy, so glad to have you here. Come back and let's talk about this more. It's an interesting topic for sure.
Hey, I appreciate it, Tom. Thanks.